It's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps, and today, what is thinking like a scientist? And can anyone do it?
My very earliest memories are of being in my father's laboratory.
Biologist Hope Jaron.
He taught at a community college, and in the evenings, he would get things ready for the next day. He would maintain the equipment and set up the demonstrations, and I would go with him, my brothers and I, and we would help. I just loved the place. I loved the way it smelled. I loved the bright lights and all the different blinking objects. And from very early on, I thought, when I grow up, I'm going to have a lab, and it's going to have one of those and two of those, and I'm going to do experiments with my friends. And I imagined that for myself before I even knew what having a job was.
Hope Jaron grew up, and she did get that lab of her own. More than one. She's had geobiology labs in Georgia, Maryland, Hawaii, and now Oslo. And she thinks there should be more people like her.
I think there's a lot of folks that haven't considered science that would be good at it and would like it.
The problem is, Hope says, most of us don't actually have a chance to see inside science labs. We don't know what scientists do all day, and we don't know how they think. So she wrote a book to try to explain. It's called Lab Girl. It won the National Book Critics Circle Award, and it begins with her own first encounters in her dad's lab.
Well, he had the physics demonstrations. I remember those really well. You know, the balls that roll down a slope and slopes of different shape and, magnets, you know, turning magnets in an electrical field. And, he had laser that you could...
He had a laser?
Yeah, and you could turn it on and clap erasers in front of it. I remember you could fill the air with chalk dust and you could see the beam of the laser and you could refract the light and things like that. And I remember we'd say, yeah, can we take out this? Can we take out that? Can we do the magnets? And he would never, ever, ever say no.
Now, you've also written really eloquently about feeling that science isn't something that just happens in a lab. Science is practiced in the home, too. It's maybe the place where most of us learn something about science first. Looking back, what do you feel like you learned about science from your mother?
My mother thought about things while she did them, and she was constantly optimizing her activities in terms of either the resources she was using or the time that it took to do it or the amount of labor that it took to do it. You know, when you make jam, how few dishes can you dirty during the whole process from picking to cleaning to boiling to canning? How few times can you heat up the stove? And I saw her do that with cooking, with sewing, with gardening. Think about it while you do it, before, during, and after you do it. And tweak the way you do it. And I was just taught that that was how you lived life.
You wrote somewhere that I remember because it just that so struck me that she knew how to adjust the tension when she was sewing on buttons.
Oh, absolutely. So if you replace the buttons on a shirt, you do the cuffs differently than you do the top one, differently than you do the bottom one, because you're always buttoning and unbuttoning, you know, the cuffs or the top. So you would use maybe different thread, you would give a different tension to it, you would knot it differently, etc. But you would work that into whatever you were doing. How were these different objects going to be used in the long term? And try to think one, two, three steps ahead with everything you did.
You wrote this fabulous blog post I wanted to ask you about. I think it was a piece you were writing about why you love science. But I do remember that this post began with the line, "My grandmother knew how to cook an owl."
Yes.
Like, really?
Well, these were hard days. You know, the Depression hit the Midwest pretty hard. So the combination of having a lot of mouths to feed and having the woods at your back door brought some strange things to your cooking pot, whatever you could catch. Mm. And so I knew that the women in my family could do that if they had to. And I knew that as a woman, as my mother's daughter, there were problems that could be solved if they had to be solved.
Well, I'm wondering if you, part of the reason you became a professional, paid, tenured scientist with a lab of your own, I wondered if any of that is because of the women in your family, like your grandmother, like your mother, women who didn't have the opportunity to train as scientists, but who might have liked it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm always very, very sensitive every day, every hour to what a good fortune it is to be able to think for a living. Women's lives didn't have room, you know, for professional science in the way that I practice it now. And yet, they used all those skills, planning and calculating and guessing and trial and error and working. That's something we've been doing for generations and generations.
Why did you choose plants? I mean, you know, you liked science first, but you could have gone into physics or chemistry or lots of other things. So why plants?
I chose plants because it was really the hardest problem I could think of. I was looking at the chemistry of a material that is found inside a seed. So it's a tree called the hackberry tree, and inside the hackberry fruit is a pit that surrounds the endosperm, the part that will grow into another tree. And this material it's like a peach pit. It's hard because it's actually made of rock. And we were interested in the process of how that rock forms. And we had some experiments set up. I was a graduate student. These were some trees in Colorado. We had it all staked out. We were looking at the water coming into the plant and the weather, and the grand finale was going to be when they bore fruit. And by the end of the year, none of the trees at or near my site blossomed or bore fruit. They just didn't. And it became very, very clear to me that these things were alive. They were not going to make fruit so that I could have a nice thesis. They were making fruit and making seeds in order to do something that was part of their agenda. And it sounds simple, but to have that really driven home that you're dealing with a living organism that's just as alive as you are. I think we know plants are alive, but I think the idea that they are as alive as we are, they're just doing different things using different strategies for different reasons. And I thought, wow, that's a mystery I could spend my whole life on.
What I love about that also is that glimpse of a world in which all this green stuff around us isn't just passively alive. It's actively alive, making decisions, doing things, because that isn't how we think of plants. We think of them as, I don't know, green backdrops.
Right. So, and I try to talk to my classes about generalities, boiling it down and saying every living thing, whether it's a worm or you or me or a tree or a microbe, has five things they want to accomplish in order to keep their species going. And that's to grow, to store resources against hard times, to maintain their tissues, to heal, to defend themselves against whatever threatens them, and to reproduce eventually. And if we look at any living organism, we see those five activities. And if we look at plants, we see them doing it with totally different suite of tools and a different suite of responses and a different suite of priorities. And that's what I think is really fascinating.
Do you feel like you've learned anything that has then suggested strategies to you, either for things, ways to flourish in the world, or else just ways to see the world differently?
One thing I've been thinking about for many, many years, and it comes from a brilliant professor I had very early on, who said to me very simply that the difference between a plant and an animal is that if you don't like it where you are, and you're a plant, you can't get up and walk away. And ever since then, I've been thinking about, as animals, that is so much our strategy. If it gets cold, we go indoors. If we move and we attack something or we flee from it, so much of how we deal with the world is through movement. And plants stay. They stay there and take it. You know, the tree outside, it gets cold, it gets hot, it never goes indoors. It doesn't run away from all the things trying to eat it. And what do you learn from life? How do you interact with the world differently if you stay? And that I think about more and more because I have moved around so many different places, you know, building labs and trying to make ends meet. And I'm starting to look at life and say, what do people get from staying? How do we grow in ways that we don't grow if we're putting all that energy into running around?
We've been talking kind of philosophical terms, but the other aspect of science is that a lot of it, as far as I know, is fairly tedious. You know, there's a lot of labeling. There's a lot of, you know, gathering up tiny, minute bits of data and looking at them again and again. By the time you're like you running your own lab, do you just leave that for your students? Or, I mean, how do you feel about the grunt work side of science?
I love that stuff. You know, I just love it. I just feel good when I do it. It's satisfying to me. I like to be busy at something that feels useful. I mean, I'm a dog lover. And so when I say this, you know, I have you ever had one of those dogs that just wants to chase the ball?
Yeah.
It doesn't want to sit with you on the couch or be petted or anything like that. And it just wants you to throw the tennis ball. And there's no number of times it won't come back and get it.
I have one of those dogs.
Did you ever sit down with it and say, aren't you tired of the tennis ball? I mean, like going and getting it, doesn't that get boring? Isn't it tedious or whatever? And he would just look at you like, what are you saying? It's a tennis ball. It's the most glorious thing in the world. It just gets better every time I do it. And I know that makes me unusual, but that's really how I feel about having a big pile of labeled samples next to me and filling up my lab notebook with new data and just I don't know. It feels good to do it, and it's my favorite kind of day.
Hope Jaren is a geobiologist at the University of Oslo in Norway. She recently won the National Book Critics Circle Award for her memoir, Lab Girl.